Let us start with a prayer. Please chant Shanti Mantra. Om Apyayantu Mamangani Vak Pranas Chakshu Shrotram Athabalam Indriyani Jasarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maam Brahma Nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarot Anirakaranamastu Anirakaranam Me Astu Tadatmani Nirateya Upanishatsu Dharmaste Mahi Santu Te Mahi Santu Om Shanti 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 Om. May all my limbs, my whole body, including the eyes, ears and other sense organs, the prana shakti flowing in me and all the sense organs be very strong. This is the first part of this prayer, prayer for strength. The ancient rishis of the Upanishadic age, they knew that strength is very necessary to accomplish anything meaningful, not only in this worldly life, also in spiritual pursuits. So this is the first part, seeking strength, prayer for strength. The second part of this prayer is an affirmation from the Upanishads, which says, Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam. All this means this whole visible universe, including all of us, everything in it, is none other than Brahman itself, described in the Upanishads. This is the gist of all the Upanishads, that all this is Brahman. Brahman alone is the ultimate reality. Why is that affirmation necessary? Because frequently we have to remind ourselves of this goal. This is the goal of our life, that we have to realize, experience that we are all that Brahman, not merely bodies and minds. So to keep that goal in mind always is necessary. So on at every opportunity we remind ourselves, all this is really Brahman. Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam. Then the third part of this prayer is that we should not reject this truth. We should accept it as a working hypothesis and proceed to experience the truth of that statement in the Upanishads in our life. That is what we are here to accomplish, to know the truth that we are that. So we have to accept it first and then proceed to realize it. If I dismiss that, this statement that all this is Brahman is simply there in the ancient scriptures, it may be true, may not be true, it is so old, so I don't want to bother about it. If we think like that, then nothing happens. We don't make any progress in spiritual life. So first thing, we should accept it as a hypothesis and then proceed to verify and experience the truth of that. So may I not reject this truth. Maam Brahma Nirakuryam. May I not reject the truth of Brahman. Mama Brahma Nirakarot. May Brahman also not reject me. Brahman does not reject anything or accept anything. It is from our side we feel like that. So may there be no rejection at all. Anirakaranamastu. Anirakaranam me astu. May there be no rejection at all. Nirakaranam means rejection. Adhirakaranamastu means may there be no rejection of this truth. That is the third part of this prayer. The last part of this prayer is a prayer for all the virtues described in the Upanishads. Virtues such as truthfulness, purity of conduct, upasana, renunciation, inward renunciation, all these things are necessary to pursue this truth. And then we need those virtues. So we pray that we may we get all those virtues described in the Upanishads. Ye dharmaha upanishatsu te mayi santu. Te mayi santu. May all those virtues come to me. Why do we need those virtues? Because tadatmani nirate mayi. In me who is engaged in seeking that Atman, these virtues are a necessity, so I pray for them. That is the fourth and last part of that prayer. Then, like all other prayers, this also ends with the prayer for peace on all the three fronts. Adhyatmika Shanti, peace within each one of us, so we do not create any trouble or obstruction for ourselves or for others. Adi Bhautika Shanti, peace and harmony amongst all beings, including other people, animals, plants and things, so that there is no trouble from any quarters. And thirdly, Adi Daivika Shanti, may there be peace in all of nature, so we do not suffer from due to natural calamities such as earthquakes, floods, drought, forest fires, lightning, hurricanes, volcanic eruption and other problems should not bother us. So peace, may there be peace in nature. So that is why we always say Om Shanti 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 three times. So with that prayer we start our study of this topic of true happiness. The topic is true happiness. Let me chant this prayer again. Then we will prepare our mind. This prayer prepares our minds and bodies that we study for the study that ensues. Om Aapyayantu Mamangani Vak Pranaschakshushrotram Athabalam Indriyani Chasarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maam Brahma Nirapuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarot Anirakaranamastu Anirakaranam Me Astu Tadatmani Nirateya Upanishatsu Dharmaste Mayi Santu Te Mayi Santu. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Customary to start all our activities such as study etc. with a prayer like this. A prayer like this prepares our bodies and minds and the atmosphere, environment conducive to the study that follows. This topic that I chose to discuss with you is called true happiness. So this is this topic of happiness forms a big topic in our scriptures, Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads and Puranas and other scriptures. This is a major topic because all of us are seeking happiness all the time. We do so many things. What is the motivation for all activities that we do? If you search why we do these activities, we may find some approximate motivation. If you ask somebody why you are going to college, they say, I want to get a degree, I want to get a graduate degree. Why do you want to get a graduate degree? Well, because I want to get a good job. Why do you want to get a good job? Well, I can make a lot of money from that one. So why do you want to make a lot of money? Well, because with money I can be happy. So eventually all these activities, if you examine their motivation, all these things they converge. For everything that we do, this is the only reason. We want to be happy, we want to minimize suffering in our life, we want to maximize comfort and happiness in our lives. So everything, even animals also like that. If you see a small worm crawling on the ground, and if there is light coming from a window, it will try to go in the opposite direction, towards some closet or something, darkness, it will seek comfort, it senses danger in light, everything is like that. Doing something knowingly or unknowingly, we are doing all these things for happiness. Even the wicked people who steal and rob and do other things, what do? They also think, oh, if I do this, something will happen. If I rob a bank, I'll get a lot of money. They can go away to Mexico or some place and I can live happily thereafter forever, like that. So that is the motivation for all actions. So the ancient rishis, they studied this topic of happiness in great detail. Then they came to the conclusion that in worldly life, in day-to-day life, we generally do three categories of activities to seek happiness only. First thing we do is we have this belief that if I have a lot of property, possessions, big house, expensive car, and nice other appliances, and so a lot of money, if I have all these things, I'll be happy. So we strive to acquire those things. Possessions. We believe that if we have possessions, things that we possess, then we can be happy. We see poor people are struggling, they don't have any money, no food to eat, no place to stay. So we don't want to be unhappy like that. We want to be comfortable, happy, nice house. So that is one thing we do, acquire possessions, thinking that possessions will bring us happiness. That is one thing we do. Then second thing we do, we try to do so many other things, accomplishments. If I excel in some endeavor, if I become a great sportsman, if I win the Olympic gold medal in some event, or if I become a famous politician and run for public office and be elected to high office, if I do things like that, that will bring me happiness. It will bring fame, power, influence. So many people will look up to me, I will be the leader. That makes me happy, power, fame, those things. People do all kinds of activities to become famous. If you see the Guinness Book of World Records, all kinds of unimaginably trivial things they do just to get their name in the Guinness Book of World Records. And then after what happens next year, somebody else will do it a little bit more and we become history. So somebody else will do something a little bit more ridiculous thing, and that will be the first place. So that kind of happiness, fame will bring us happiness, acclaim, people praising us, visibility, all those things we do, all kinds of things, accomplishments, hoping that will make us happy. The third kind of thing that we do is to seek happiness through relationships. People friends, families, children, if I have, I'll be happy. Spouse, if I have, I'll be happy. Relationships, if you have good friends, circle of friends, I'll be happy. Like that, through relationships, we seek happiness. There's nothing wrong about any of these things. Nothing wrong at all. This is all normal people do, billions of people do, all over the world. So we should not say this is wrong. But we have to pause and think, I'm doing all these things. Am I really happy now? If you ask most people, yes, they are happy to some extent. They are doing all these things. They are very successful in their professions. They have a nice family life, comfortable life. They are happy. But then something is lacking. Something is missing. If nothing else, if everything is going on, then the fear that some of these may go away, something may happen, I may become sick, or my child may do something wrong and end up in jail. All these kinds of fear of loss of this will be there always. So it is, and even if everything goes on well for some time, then gradually changes happen. Old age comes, children grow up and go away, far away to other countries, and then empty nest syndrome, and spouse also, one of us will have to leave earlier. Old age will come, death will come, then all this will end. So this is one kind of happiness, but it is probably not the best kind of happiness. So that conclusion. If not, how else can we be happy other than these three things? That question. Then they discovered that there is another kind of activity which brings us happiness, which is slightly better, and it has less adverse side effects. That was, this is called the Vishyananda, they call it. This kind of happiness that comes through possessions, through relationships and accomplishments and fame, power, etc. All of this they gave a name, generic name. That name is Vishyananda. Vishyananda means, Vishya means sense objects. All these kinds of happiness depend upon something outside of me. In relationships, the other person must respond and make me happy. I strive to make the other person happy, and the other person should reciprocate and also give me happiness and comfort. Then only there will be success in relationship, happiness in relationship. Same thing about children. Same thing about property. Same thing about always something else besides me, outside of me. I look up to that, I depend on that for my happiness, position and power all like that too. So if that is not available, then my happiness will not be there, it will be broken. So my happiness in Vishyananda depends upon the constant availability of something else outside of me. And since it is outside of me, whether it is other person and position or possession something, I will probably not have complete control over it all the time, and then I may lose it, then that happiness goes. We can see this happen very often in relationships. People are very happy with each other together, the being of relationship. They cannot bear separation. They want to be always together. They tell each other sincerely, they tell, I love you too, like that. That goes around, right? But they say, somehow I read that almost 50% of marriages in this country, they end up in divorce or separation. So what happened? They started life nicely, so much love and everything. Something goes wrong, two people are involved, two minds or two egos are involved. Something changes, then I love you slowly disappears. Then I cannot stand you, get lost, I want to be separated. All those things, every now and then we see, read about those things. So that kind of uncertainty is there. There is no guarantee. There is always fear of loss. There was a famous sage, who was a king before. His name was Bhartrihari. This Bhartrihari was a very insightful person. He wrote three compositions. Three poems, verses, each had 100 verses. One is called Niti Shatakam, Sringara Shatakam, first one. Sringara Shatakam means the describing the beauty of the human relationship, the happiness that we get from relationships with other person, all those Sringara means beauty, that he described 100 verses. We don't study that. Then he wrote Niti Shatakam. Niti means rules for moral conduct, how we should do, what we should do, what we should not do. We should always tell the truth and things like that. 100 verses Niti Shatakam he wrote. Then he wrote another book called Vairagya Shatakam. Vairagya Shatakam means 100 verses on Vairagya, renunciation. Then he said all these things. Do not bring lasting unconditional happiness. They go away sometime, they change, they diminish and change. So better thing is to find happiness in Vairagya. So in Vairagya, one of those verses, poems, there is one line, I don't remember all the four lines. It says, it begins like this, Bhoge roga bhayam, kule chuti bhayam, vitte nripala bhayam, like this, four, five things. Last line is, sarvam mast bhayamvitam, bhavindranam vairagyam eva bhayam. All things that we have now, which were not with us originally, which we acquired at some effort, they are going to be separated from us, they will be lost. And that is a position of such a thing is accompanied by fear. Sarvam mastu bhavi drunam vayanvitam. Always fear is there, it may diminish and go away. There is only one thing, if we have that, there is no fear of loss. That is vairagyameva abhayam. So vairagya shatakam, if you have renunciation. So this renunciation topic came, it is a difficult topic, a lot of misunderstanding is there. We will not go into it right now. So that was the conclusion. This Vishyananda is not dependable. It is highly conditional. It comes and goes. Depends upon some other object or person being available. Contact being there. Supposing I want to buy an expensive garment, a Brooks Brothers suit or something I want to buy. And I am doing window shopping in a mall. All these suits are displayed on the mannequins nicely, very expensive, nicely done. And I am just wearing blue jeans and a t-shirt, I don't have any money to buy that one. But I am standing there, just the glass wall separates me between that suit and myself. The object is there, I am there. But there is no contact, there is no way for me to make it mine. So that doesn't give me happiness, there must be contact. Yehi samsparshaja bhoga. Sri Krishna describes in the Gita, 5th chapter, there is a nice verse which describes the limitations of this kind of happiness called Vishyananda. We are still talking about Vishyananda. This is limited. Limited means it has some difficulties, shortcomings. So in that verse, in the 5th chapter, Sri Krishna says, this kind of happiness that comes through other sense objects, other people, position, fame, etc., it is not permanent. Someday there will be separation. Because these things were not with us in the beginning. We acquired these things, either a power or a position or some jewelry or money or a spouse or something we acquired. Something that is not intrinsic, something that came, was acquired at some effort, sooner or later there will be separation. That is the idea. So it is not permanent. Yehi samsparshaja bhoga. This kind of happiness that comes from other things is called samsparshaja. Contact must be there. I must be there, object must be there, contact must be there. If the suit is on the other side of the inside the shop, I am standing outside the shop with no money or a credit card in my pocket. It is there, I am there, but there is no contact, so it doesn't give me any happiness. So, supposing a young person comes from India, H1 visa or something, IT, gets a nice job in a company. Then after 6 months, he goes and gets married in India. And then the wife cannot come because visa takes time. So she is there in India somewhere. He is here, he has to come back to work. So she is there, he is there, both are young, ready, willing to give happiness to each other. But they are separated by this huge Atlantic Ocean. And the US Immigration Department says, let us come. So all they can do is just to send email and talk on the telephone, Skype or something, every day, phone conversation only. So there is no real happiness, only anticipation of happiness is there. So that's some sparshaya bhoga, means object, enjoyer and sparsha, contact, all the three must be there. If one of these things is missing, then there is no happiness. It's conditional happiness. Vishyananda is highly conditional. If one condition breaks, there is no ananda. So like this, they discovered the shortcomings of Vishyananda. The second thing is Adyantavanta, Sri Krishna says in that Gita. This kind of Vishyananda is not always available. Adyanta means it has a beginning and an end. None of these things were with me. When I was born, I didn't become the President of the United States. I had to grow up, I had to have been born here, must be 35 years of age, then I must run for office, spend $1 billion for campaign, get the votes. Then if I succeed, I'll go to White House. Okay, I went there. Then term of office, term limit is there, 4 years. Then I have to step down. After 4 years, if I run for re-election, if I am still elected second time, then I can be there for 4 more years, and after that you cannot run for a third time. Somebody else will go to the White House. So there's a limitation. Time limit is there. So Sri Krishna said, Adyantavantaha Kaunteya. Then what happens? Another problem with Vishyananda. Dukkhayo naya evate. In the end, they will only cause disillusionment, unhappiness. As long as they are there, everything is okay, we are happy. But something breaks, something happens, then unhappiness comes. Only memories remain. So that is the nature of Vishyananda. If this is not the best way, then how else can we be happy? You still want to be happy. So the Rishi said there is another kind of happiness, which does not require much investment or much effort. See, if you want to be a medical doctor, lot of effort is involved. 4 years of college, then you do MCAT and all these things. Then if you get admission in a medical school, 4 more years of study. Then you have to do 3 steps, USMLE, step 1, 2, and 3. Do 3 years residency. Some specialties 5 years, radiology 5 years, surgery 5 years, ENT 5 years. Sometimes another fellowship for 1 or 2 years more is done. Then you will become a really full-fledged doctor. Then you have taken loans for all these things. You have to pay the loans back. See how much work is involved. So then they said, now that is another way to find happiness, which is relatively easier. You can get a lot of happiness by chanting the names and glories of God, by doing worship. Thinking about God, you get happiness tested. They call it bhajanananda. Bhajana means not only singing bhajans, bhajana means any kind of worship of God. If you do that one, see, you get more happiness. And that doesn't cost much money. You don't have to study for so many years for that one. Even if you don't sing very well, you can go to somebody who sings and you can just be there and enjoy the music very nicely. Usually there is prasad at the end. And then it will be very nice. So bhajanananda is good. The other advantage is, it always makes you happy. And the conditions are very few. You just have to go to some bhajan group. Or you can yourself sing bhajans at home if nobody is there. And you will find happiness. And then you can keep on singing as much as you want. Nobody stops. As long as the neighbors don't protest. You can sing. Use harmonium or tabla, whatever you want. That is bhajanananda. Plus the other advantage of bhajanananda is, it is no adverse side effect. In the Vishyananda, what happens if you enjoy, lot of pleasures for some time, in course of time, our ability to enjoy will gradually diminish. See, this is a revelation that we see in the Upanishads. If you enjoy physical pleasures for some time without any restraint, what happens? Very soon, our ability to enjoy will quickly diminish. So when Yama offered to Nachiketa in Kathopanishad, some of you are studying Kathopanishad, Yama says, he doesn't want to answer the question about Atman. Nachiketa asks, Yama says, I will give you kingdom, large territory, I will give you long life, I will give you dancing, singing people, everything. Take all those things and enjoy, you are still very young. Then Nachiketa refuses, no, I don't want all these things, I don't care for these things. Why? So he says, Sarve Indriyanam Jarayanti Tejaha. Such a young boy has such a great insight. He says, the more you enjoy these physical pleasures, very quickly the sense organs lose their ability to enjoy the same pleasures. Object is available, I am there, contact is there, but no possibility of getting pleasure. Take food for example. Young age we eat a lot of food, we don't count calories, we don't read the labels. Transfer all those things are okay. Saturated fat, nobody worries when you are young. Because you are able to burn the calories and you are enjoying the food nicely, tasty cheesecake and everything. Then after some time what happens? If you keep on doing this one, then the doctor says, no, your cholesterol is too high, you are probably eating too much, or your triglycerides are high, your blood pressure is high, you reduce the salt, your sugar, your glucose is very high, fasting sugar, you reduce the sugar, take some tablet, cholesterol is high, take some Lipitor, all these things, this will come, and then things are available, plenty of food is available, I have the money to buy the food, but I can't eat, because the sense organs have lost their ability to enjoy food even if it is available. See, that is the problem with Vishayananda. So many difficulties with Vishayananda. In Bhajanananda, there is no such side effect, adverse side effect is not the key. One enjoy, if you cannot sing, somebody else will sing. Or you can take CD and play the CD and enjoy music, even if you cannot sing. That will be better this. The other big advantage in Bhajanananda is, the mind becomes purified. Here the mind becomes more attached. The more we enjoy, more attachment comes, desire becomes stronger, ability to desire will diminish, desire keeps on making stronger, and then unhappiness comes. See, this we see in the story of Yayati. The great problem of Vishayananda is, even if these things are available, Vishayas are available, I am able to acquire those things, our ability to enjoy will greatly diminish very quickly. That happened to King Yayati. Yayati was a very thoughtful king. And he had married this woman Devayani. Devayani's father had extracted a promise from Yayati that if you marry my daughter, you should not marry anybody. Those kings used to marry several people. So Yayati had agreed because he loved his Devayani very well. So he agreed, they were happy for some time. Then what happens, this Yayati, human weakness is there, he got interested in another woman. So he had a relationship, Devayani became very angry. Devayani's father cursed Yayati, oh, you promised to me that you will not take any other woman if you marry my daughter, now you have taken this woman. May you lose your youth right away, may you become an old man. Devayani's father cursed Yayati. Yayati immediately became an old person, though he was young in age, became an old person right away. Body became old person's body. But the desire to enjoy still remains. So what does he do? This man became very unhappy. He goes to his father-in-law, begs, sir, I'm sorry, I did this one. Please restore my youth. He says, no, there is no way to restore it. My words will be like the truth like that. So then all right, since he was begging, I will show you a way out. You go back to your kingdom, find somebody in your kingdom who is a young person who is willing to swap his youth with your old age. If you can take your old age, he will get your youth and will become youthful again. Can you find somebody in your kingdom? Yeah, but he says, oh, no problem. So many of my subjects are willing to give their life to me. and a popular king.
Okay.
He went back. Then he sent a message all over his kingdom. King wants to give half his kingdom to somebody who is willing to give youth to the king, but he will become old man. He thought there will be a long line of people waiting in the palace next morning. Nobody showed up. He's offering half the kingdom. All he wants is somebody should take away his old age and give back his youth. Nobody is willing. Then he had four sons. Four sons, I think. He goes to the first son. Son, can you please take my old age and give me your youth? I'll give you half the kingdom. The son says, even if you give me whole kingdom, I don't want that. It's your problem. You've got to win it. Tough luck. You deal with it. I want to enjoy my youth myself. First son says, he goes to second son. He also refuses. Who wants to lose their youth? They want to enjoy it. Third son says, no, dad, I cannot do it. You have to give me one fourth of the kingdom anyhow because I am your son. Fourth son is different. He says, dad, if that's what you want, I'll be happy to give my youth. So they do some ceremony. Fourth son gives his youth. He becomes a young man again and offers his kingdom. That fourth son declines, I don't want your kingdom. You give it to my other brothers, he will go away someplace. Yayati becomes youthful again. So he starts enjoying all the pleasure. The king had a lot of resources. Everything he wanted he could get. With renewed gusto, he enjoys all the pleasures very much with great relish. So how long that goes on? In course of time, he came old again. Old age will come. Even borrowed youth also will go away one day. So again he became old second time. Then he sat down and thought, Yayati, I have enjoyed more pleasures than anybody else in this world. I had two youths. Still at the end of my second youth also, even after enjoying so many things, my desires for enjoyment have not diminished even a little bit. They are as strong or even stronger than before. So then he comes to a very insightful conclusion. So he shares his thoughts with his wife. He says, see, these desires are a wonderful thing. Desires for enjoyment of Vishyananda, they are very bad. The more you try to quench them, the stronger they will become. They won't go away. So he says that najāda kāma kāmānam upabhogena śamyate havisha kṛṣṇavatmeva bhūya eva bhivardhate. He says. The story of Vyati comes in Bhagavata and Mahabharata also. Nice story. So he says, this kama's desire for Vishyananda, of enjoyment of sense objects for pleasure, that kind of desire does not go away. If you fulfill them, they become stronger. How? If there is a flame, a fire, if you want to quench it, if you pour ghee on top of the fire, what happens? Will it be quenched? It becomes a bigger fire. Desires are like that. So like that, Yayati story is like in the Bhagavata. So Vishyananda has a problem. The more you fulfill, stronger it becomes, our ability to enjoy will diminish. And then what happens? In the end, unhappiness comes. So Sri Krishna says, this Vishyananda causes dukkha at the end. Yehisam svasparsha bhuksam sparsha jabhoga dukkha yo naya evate. Cause misery at the end. Adyantavantaha, they come and go, not permanent, Vishyananda. Therefore, what is to be done? Nateshu ramate buddha, a wise person, buddhiman buddha, teshu in this Vishyananda, naramate, does not take any, does not anchor for them, does not care for them very much, because he knows the limitations. Then Bhajanananda. Bhajanananda is better. It purifies the mind also, enhances our devotion, and we keep on enjoying as long as we can hear, then we can keep on. But hearing also becomes dim with age. So that also is limited. Bhajanananda is not also forever. So at some point what happens, old age comes, ability to hear music also diminishes, and some people get Alzheimer's disease and things like that, then they don't know what music, everything they forget. That is also not the best way to find true happiness, though it is better than Bhajanananda in many ways, better than Vishyananda in many ways. Then how else can we become happy? The question of happiness persists. You have to find means for becoming permanently happy, unconditionally happy, independently happy. No dependence on other objects and sense organs, etc. So they were searching for that. Then they found out there is another kind of ananda that does not have any of these limitations that Vishyananda has, Bhajananda has. They called it Atmananda. Atmananda means the joy that comes from the self. To come to this conclusion, a lot of inquiry they did, thinking they did, the rishis. They found out that whatever happiness we enjoy, either through Vishyananda, see when you hold a child, play with the child, you see a lot of happiness, your child, that one kind of Vishyananda. Or when you buy a new house and enter a new house with all the appliances and everything, you find happiness, that's Vishyananda, that happiness. Or when we eat something very nice food, we find happiness, that ananda is Vishyananda. See, where do these things come from? Are they coming from these positions, from the child, from the house, or from the position? Where is the locus of happiness? They inquired into that question. Where is the locus of happiness? They came to the conclusion that these things, Vishyas, do not have happiness in them. It is not coming from them. It seems to be. But really, that is not the source of happiness. They came to that insightful revelation. These sense objects which we seek for happiness, there is no happiness in these sense organs. But yet it seems that they are giving us happiness. So if not from there, where is this happiness coming from? I am enjoying this, I am getting happiness from this object I possess, from this jewelry or whatever, and you say it is not coming from them, then where is it coming from? Then the rishi said something very interesting. See, this happiness that comes from the child, or from the jewelry or ornament, or from the house, or from the position, seems to be coming from there, because when I am with them, I feel happy. It is not coming from there. This is merely a reflecting surface. That happiness which seems to be coming from the child or the ornament or jewelry or house or position is really coming from here. It is all within you. It has always been within you. And this joy inside of us is being reflected, bounced off from this object. So it seems to me that it is coming from there. And then they said there is a way to bypass this undependable reflecting surface and go straight to the source of joy here. It is intrinsic, unconditional, cannot be lost because it is a part of me, it is me really. So why not go there directly, enjoy the true original joy, rather than a dim, distorted reflection of the joy coming from here. Lot of trouble to gain these things. Here, since it is your true nature, though, is always there. You just have to discover that one. They came to them a very fantastic discovery that all the happiness, no matter from where it seems to be coming from, is coming from really only one source. There is only one source of all joy. It comes back, was reflected from food, from child, from position, from power, from house, from travel, from money, from everything, and uses the erroneous impression is coming from there. We seek out those things and they will disappear. Instead of that, the sign of wisdom is leave aside these undependable reflecting surfaces. goes straight here, the source of all joy, which is intrinsic, internal, cannot be lost. This will be separated from us. They are separate from us. They'll go away from us, or we have to leave them. But here that is not possible. That is us, that is our true nature inside. This is undiminishing. This ability goes up and down. One day this object gives me a lot of happiness. Tomorrow it says, no, I don't like you, I hate you. But that doesn't happen here. This is my true nature. Unconditional, intrinsic, cannot be lost, does not diminish. It is always inside, it is always ours. So if you go there, you can always be happy. Because it is not reflected, original, it is true joy. All this happiness comes from outside is reflection, dim reflection, distorted reflection. So they said, Nateshwaramati, a wise person does not go after these things. Wise people, they simply don't care for this, they go straight here and touch base with that, contact that, enjoy that. Joy always intrinsically ours. Why not try for that? They gave a name for that. It is Atmananda. So three kinds of Ananda. Vishayananda, limitations we have seen. Bhajanananda, better. That also has time limit. Old age comes, hearing disappears. So we ability to enjoy music, devotional song also diminishes. But Atmananda does not depend on the existence of the body. Atman is always there. Even the body is not there, Atman is there. In the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna says, when the body goes, the Atman still remains. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. You read that in the Gita. Sharire hanyamane, Atmana hanyate. He is always there. That is source of all joy. So that is the true happiness. Yes. True happiness is that which is intrinsic, not to be acquired from outside. Anything acquired from outside is also going to go away. Here a lot of effort is involved. Since it is our true nature, that is us, we realize that one. Does not diminish, this diminishes. Does not go away, cannot go away because that is our true nature, intrinsic nature. This goes away sooner or later. Unfailingly gives us happiness. This is not so. All the disadvantages we have in Vishayananda, none of that applies to this Atmananda. So why not go there? So the great rishis did just that. They did not seek outward happiness from worldly positions and running for office or family, etc. What they did was, they went straight here, became established in the fountain of joy, unlimited, the infinite fountain of joy. They were always immersed in so much happiness that sometimes they could not, this human frame could not contain that happiness. So intense, so much absorption, happiness. If you examine any life of any great Mahatma, in terms of material possessions, what do they have? Very little, if anything. But they always seem to be happy, somehow. You take the case of Bhagavan Ramana Maharshi. He recently, 1950, he achieved Mahasamadhi in Tiruvannamalai. What did he have? When he was in the cave on the top of the hill, Skandashramam in Arunachala Hills, all he had was one piece of loincloth, kopinam, one piece of cloth only. And he was living there alone in the cave, some stream water was flowing there. And then he would every day take bath in the stream, drink that water, wash his loincloth, put it back, remain absorbed in ananda, atmananda, nothing to worry about. That was always gave them so much. And we have all these things and house and the swamis also, ashramas and fundraising and buildings and cars and airplane. One Swamiji had 83 Rolls Royce cars. So all this they do. So seeking Vishyananda, this is what. All other Mahatmas are like that too. In terms of material possessions, very little at all, nothing at all. They don't go for a job, they don't make money, they take the vow of poverty. They seem to be happy somehow. Sri Ramakrishna was like that. All his disciples were like that. One of his disciples, Sri Ramakrishna, 16 sannyasi disciples, monastic disciples. One of them was Swami Duryananda. He is my favorite. Wonderful. So he was roaming in the Himalayas alone, doing intense austerities. At one time, he used to live in a hut somewhere, and once in 2-3 days he would go for begging food, not every day. And some roti or whatever they gave in North India, he would eat it for 2-3 days. If it became very dry, and he would put it in cold water somewhere in a stream, when it became soft, he would eat. The rest of the time he was absorbed in Brahma, Vishi, Atmananda. And what did he have in terms of possessions? Only one piece of cloth he had. Somehow, what happened, I don't know. That piece of cloth also he lost, or got torn or something. At one time, he didn't have anything. So, nobody was there in those days in that region. No population, nothing. Nobody bothered, nobody cared. And there are some Swamis who are Digambara Swamis, they don't wear any cloth anyhow. People are used to that in some parts of India. So he was there like that, with nothing at all. Imagine a piece of cloth. So he was walking there, he was walking in the cremation ground or something. Then he found a piece of cloth there, maybe from some dead body or something. Half of it was burnt. So he took it and put it on his body. That was the only possession he had for some time. So like that, they have this Atmananda. That kind of Atmananda does not depend upon having anything, does not depend upon any possessions, does not depend upon acquiring any position or power or fame or progeny. This immortal joy, how does it come? That's the major question in the Upanishads. There's a nice episode in one of the Upanishads. There is a big Upanishad called Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. It's the biggest Upanishad, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. There is a great sage called Yajnavalkya. See, those days the rishis were householders. They were not sannyasis like this. They were householders, means they had ashrama, and then they had their wife, Arundhati, Vasishtha's wife, like that. Gautama Rishi had a wife, like that. They were family people. And then they had ashrama, they had a lot of cattle, because the cattle was the indicator of wealth in those days. They used to have cattle and some other things. So they had an establishment there. But they were detached from all these things. They knew these are not going to be there permanently. So they were rishis at the same time. So one such man was there. His name was Yajnavalkya. He had not even gone to the forest. He was in the town, staying as a householder. But he was a great gnani. He had not one but two wives. This Yajnavalkya had two wives. So at one point in life, after middle age, as was the practice those days, this Yajnavalkya, he thinks, now time has come for me to go to the forest, to go to the Vanaprastha ashrama. See, those days four ashramas people were observing, four stages of life. Brahmacharya ashrama, Grihastha ashrama, Vanaprastha ashrama, Sannyasa ashrama, like that. So he called his wives, Maitreyi and Katyayani. He says, now I am thinking of going to Vanaprastha ashrama, to the forest. I will live in a hermitage, simpler life. I don't take any of these things with me. Do you like to come with me or do you like to stay back? If you like to stay back, you can keep all this house and property and cattle and everything. I won't take anything with me. You can stay here, both of you. Or if you want to go with me to the forest, then you have to live a very simple life. There is none of these comforts, just a hermitage, and I will be there, and whatever food is there, we have to eat fruits, whatever. And you have to spend our time in contemplation and study. So what would you like to do? He gives this option to his two wives. So the wives ask the question, supposing we stay back here, taking care of the property, the cattle, the house, whatever they have, and you alone go to the forest, then will you be happy? They ask. He says, yes, you will get the same happiness that any person with all these possessions will get. Then one of the wives, Maitreyi, she asks the question, supposing I stay back here and continue this household, this cattle and everything, will I become immortal? Will I experience that Atmananda immortality, Amartatva, will I get? And he said, no. Yajnavalkya says, Amartatvasyana shasti vittena, he says. Vitta means money. Money means money those days meant cattle. Like we have dollars now. So we measure a person's wealth by how many dollars he has. Bill Gates has 45 some billion dollars. And that is the richest man like that. Dollars is the indicator of wealth. Those days, the wealth was measured in terms of how many heads of cattle somebody had. Somebody had 500 cattle, that was middle class. If somebody had only 15 cattle, then he's a poor man. If somebody had 1,000 cattle, he's upper middle class. So like that. So he says, Amartatvasya na asha asti vittena. No, you won't get Amartatva if you keep the money, the wealth. Then she thinks about it. She says, I'll go with you. No, I'll stay back here. So they split. Yajnavalkya and Maitreyi, they go to the forest, live in a hermitage, pursuing the Atmajnana. And Katyayani's second wife, she stays there and takes care of the house and cattle, everything. Now what happens? Yajnavalkya and Maitreyi, they stay in their hermitage. They continue their study, their contemplation. Yajnavalkya is a jnani. So slowly, in course of time, he teaches all about the Atman, Atmajnana to his wife Maitreyi. That forms a big part of Udaranyaka Upanishad. There it says, this kind of Atmananda does not come by acquiring money. Money brings Vishyananda. You know the limitations of Vishyananda. Amrutatvasya na ashapasti vittena, he says. That is the conclusion that the rishis came to those days about Atmananda. Then other Upanishad, Manarana Upanishad, Kavalya Upanishad, another mantra that we have all heard that mantra. Sometimes priests chant that mantra here also. There it says, na karmana na prajaya dhane na tyage naike amartatva manashuhu. You heard this one. So it says, amartatva means immortality. Immortality means Atmananda, which is immortal. Vishyananda is very much limited in time. Diminishes and goes away completely. Bhajanananda also. But Atmananda does not go away. It is immortal, it is eternal, always there. So that cannot be acquired na karmana, not by doing a lot of karma. Karma means kamya karma. Jagnya, yaga, tirtha, yatra, dana, all those things. If we do, what happens? We go to heaven. In Puranas, these things are described. You do a lot of these good deeds. You give the charity, you give, you observe fast, you do some various puja, Varasi Divinayaka Vrata, Swarnagauri Vrata, Paramahalakshmi Vrata, Shivaratri Vrata, all these things you do for 16 weeks and all your life like that. Then you give dana to some Brahmana priest who comes. You give upayana dana, you give rice and coconut and some money and everything. Or sometimes you give godana, all those things. Obsession is not good in your horoscope. You give oil and everything unafraid to somebody and till and everything. Now all these things, we do, what happens? Why do we do all these things? Because this kind of good deeds, they are kamya karmas. The wants and benefit from them. The kings used to do yajna, yaga, etc. Why were they doing that? Because they wanted to go to heaven after that. So that is good. If we do a lot of good deeds and earn a place in heaven, and that is not also a permanent thing. How long can you stay in heaven? Bhagavad Gita says in 9th chapter that if we at all earn a place in heaven by doing a lot of these good deeds, charity, yajna, etc., a tenure there is also, it has a term limit. When the stock of punya is exhausted, we will be sent back to human birth again. So in Gita, Sri Krishna says, Kshine punye martyaloka vishanti. When the punya becomes exhausted, then we go to martyaloka. Swarga tenure is over. So that is also not permanent. As long as swarga is nice, don't have to go to work, no cooking, no cleaning. Cafeteria is open all the time, all ethnic food, everything is available. Rambam, Menak, all those people are there to serve us. And some people believe that if they do jihad, if they go to heaven, there will be 72 people waiting for to serve them. All these concepts of swarga, that is not the real happiness. So Gita itself says that is also that. So going to swarga is like going on a vacation cruise. You know, if you go on a 3-day cruise to some island, you pay $2,000. 3 days you are happy, a lot of parties are going on in there, movies and theatres and dance, and a lot of food is available around the clock, some ports, you do some shopping, everything. After 3 days you are going, be taken back and said, the cruise is over, we are down. Other passengers are waiting to board. Supposing you pay more money, $5,000, and you will be buying a 10-day cruise. Then for 10 days you can keep on roaming to all the ports and all the dancing and singing venues, no work, no cooking, nothing, no cleaning. Simply enjoy music, dance, swimming, racket ball, tennis, everything is there in that cruise. And you get a private cabin if you pay more money. You will get a port cabin in the port, you can see, have a window also to the ocean. All those things. How long? 5 days, 3 days, 5 days, 10 days, you can get 21-day cruise, you can wait in Europe, Vienna, all those places, you can go and see Amsterdam, everywhere. Then what happens? When that is over, your money is exhausted, brought back here to your Miami quarters, wherever you boarded, so please get down, your cruise is over. Swarga is like that. Punya you accumulate, you are given a place there, you enjoy for some time. And punya, the clock is ticking, punya meter is running out. When the punya meter shows zero, comes back to zero, all right, thank you, please get up, go back to Martyaloka. Again from square one you begin. So that is also not permanent. There is also Swarga, Vishyananda in a very defined form, that is all. Swargananda is also like Vishyananda, it depends upon a lot of punya you have to do, doesn't come free. Let us time limit, Ajyantamantaha. So, therefore, Nateshwaramate Buddha. So, wise people don't try for Swarga also. That's a very limited goal. So, we try for Atmananda. Best thing is to try for Atmananda. Then there's no loss of, there's no fear of loss, does not diminish, does not go away, unconditional, cannot be lost. Always. That is the three kinds of happiness, and that is true happiness. So let me see, there is something else that okay. I think I have covered the major points. If you would like to ask some questions or add something to what I have said.
I have a question.
Yes.
You are talking about Vishyananda and
right.
Bhajanananda. That is something we can immediately relate.
Right.
We know how to get that.
Right.
But we are talking about Atmananda. We know that people have attain that. But personally, we are not all the subject, we are doing the diet, right?
Yeah, right.
The one thing is, how do you get that? I mean, how do you get that, number one? Second thing, assuming that everybody attains the same thing, Atmananda, and nobody worries about any positions or anything like that, then what would be the direction we would be defining? Does it mean that we should go through the ashramas and then only go for Atmananda?
Not necessarily. No. The question is how to get Atmananda.
Yeah.
Right. Now, in the scriptures, we have a lot of scriptures. That's our unique, our speciality in Vedanta, Hindu Dharma. Now, so many scriptures are there. If something does not appeal to you, you can do something else. That choice, very rich variety of choice we have. So, all these scriptures tell us how to reach Atmananda by different paths. If you just go to Bhagavad Gita, you find so many paths there. The simplest thing it says, second chapter onwards, it begins Karma Yoga. It gives Karma Yoga, if you practice, what happens? Chitta Shuddhi will come. Chittasya Shuddhaye Karma. When Chitta Shuddhi, mind becomes pure, then the Atman, which is always present within us, even now, but simply we don't happen to be aware of that, that Atman awareness will come. The mind is the obstruction right now. Mind is full, cluttered with all kinds of unhelpful thoughts and impressions, everything. So, although Atman is there, we only read about it in the books, but we don't know it directly. So, if you have faith in the books, so say we think, oh, Atman is there. But that is, does not give me any idea of the experience of Atman. If we do this sadhana karma yoga, for example, which even most people can do, mind becomes pure, obstruction is clear, and Atmani Bhava will come, then I will be established in Atmananda, one way. So how to do karma yoga? Lot of instructions are given in the Gita. So most of them are quite simple, most people can do. Supposing that does not appeal to you, then they say, all right, do bhakti yoga. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna talks about bhakti yoga, how to be a good bhakta. Puranas also talk about bhakti yoga. Narada Maharshi has written a book on bhakti yoga called Narada Bhakti Sutras. So they say that this is an easy path because bhakti comes naturally to people. Bhakti means love of God. We all have some love of God. In some way, it may be not the best kind of love, it may be motivated love, whatever, but some bhakti is there in everybody. Some love is there in everyone. Even the wicked man loves something or somebody. So that love can be transformed, made purer and directed towards God, then becomes bhakti. Bhakti will give lot of joy, Atmananda it will give. So they will show another path. So you can do that one. Supposing this personal God, devotion to God, all those things don't appeal to you. Many people don't find interesting. You have to go down to a personal God, always sing the glories of God, chanting the name of God, do naivedyam, chanting everything we have to do. Not interested. So why not we do meditation like that? Dhyana yoga is that. Gita has that one too. So Patanjali specializes in that kind of knowledge. He wrote a very nice famous treatise called this Yoga Sutras. Four chapters are there. Then Patanjali gives eight steps, Ashtanga Yoga. So the last step is Samadhi. Beginning with Yamaniyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi, like this. So when the last step is reached, that means you are established in Atman. Samadhi means establishment in Atman. So that will lead you to the Atmananda. So there's another path, you can do that. A little bit difficult, but it is available. Then there is another path. That is the path that Shankara sometimes talks about, a lot of times talks about in his treatises, Viveka Chudamani, other books. That is, that involves the practice of Viveka, Vairagya, Shamadamadi, Shatka Sampatti, Mumukshutvam, all those things talks about that. You can follow that, it is very difficult, it is accepted, it is difficult. But some people follow that, the path of inquiry, vichara, vichara marga, jnana marga. then it could be that also takes to the same goal. So many different paths, the speciality of our Dhamma. You don't have just one path, everybody follow this, if it doesn't suit you, that is bad, tough, they don't say that. If this is not suitable, try this one. If it doesn't agree with you, try this path. This does not agree with you, try the other path. Some people make it even very simple. You can reach Atmananda, oneness with the Divine, simply by chanting incessantly the name of God. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said that one. He says in this Kali Yuga, all the Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga are difficult to do. We don't have the same strength as the rishis you all had. So those yogas are difficult. Why not just do a very simple procedure? Chaitanya said, 500 years ago, he said, constantly chant the name of God, any name of God, the same name of God every day, all the time. By constantly chanting in your mind the name of God non-stop, even when you do your activities, your mind becomes pure and you experience the same result. So he says, in this Kali Yuga, this Harinama Sankirtana itself is the greatest path. Does not require any special qualification or money or anything. Only willingness must be there. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Harer Nama Iva Kevalam, Kalau Nastyeva, Nastyeva, Nastyeva Gatiranyata. In this Kali Yuga, there is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way. Harinama Sankirtana is the only way. Harer Nama Iva Kevalam. He did that, simply chanted Harinama. He was a great scholar. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's story is very interesting, very fascinating story. Very good scholar, grammar, linguistics, all those things. He had defeated all the other scholars of his time in debate, established himself as the most superior scholar over everybody else. He had married also, young wife was there, mother was there. The story is very moving also, Chaitanya. So he gave that simple story method. You cannot say, you cannot chant Hari's name. Willingness must be there. For any of these paths, first requirement is we must be willing to do that one. That willingness is there, we have a major requirement already fulfilled. Then some instruction you can get. Then do this any path that appears to you with some diligence. It will take you to the goal. So many paths to Atmananda. Everybody can reach it somewhere, nobody is denied this opportunity. So that is the beauty of our Dharma. Chandogya Upanishad. In Chandogya Upanishad, there are a lot of stories are there. Let me see. Satyakama story. You have heard Satyakama story? Satyakama Jabala story, you have not heard? Very interesting story. There was this little boy in some poor household. His mother was a single parent. That means father was not there. The mother's name was Jabala. And then this boy was maybe 7-8 years old. The custom those days was, when the boys became 7-8 years old, they used to go to Gurukulam, the residential schools. They had to go and stay in the Guru's house for some years. And the Guru was a householder, his wife and everything will be there, other boys will be there, residential. So the boys will be staying there for some years. The Guru will have classes morning, evening, afternoon. The boys have to do some chores because they live there. They have to gather firewood, gather water, do some gardening. cooking and cleaning, helping, all those things. Boys had to share the chores. That was the custom. So this boy, his name was for the mother's name was Jabala. His name was Jabal. Something mother's name he derived, kept it there. He may have had some other name also. So one day he tells his mother, "Mom, I want to go to Gurukulam. All my friends are going. When I go to Gurukulam, the teacher will ask one question. He will ask a few questions, like filling out the application form, when we apply for college admission here. Those days it was like, orally the guru will ask, what is your name? Will ask the boy. Boy will say his name. What is your father's name? The boy has to say the father's name. Then he will ask, what is your gotra? One of the questions. Admission process to Gurukulam. Then you have to say the gotra. So the boy knew that one. So teacher will ask me gotra. What is my gotra? He asked his mother. Father was not there. The mother was a very honest woman. She was a very simple woman. But she was very honest and straightforward. She said, "Boy, my son, I don't know who your father is or was. I used to work in various households in my younger years as a domestic help. At that time you were born. Since I was working in many houses, I don't know who your father is, so I don't know what your gotra is. This is the fact. If the teacher asks you, tell him just this. Whatever happens, happens. If he gives admission, you go to Gurukulam. If he doesn't give, let us see. But this is what it is." She said like this. The boy just accepted it. He was a very courageous, honest, straightforward person without any fear. This little boy. So he goes to one Gurukulam. The teacher's name was Gautama, Haridramatha Gautama, some teacher, Gurukulam was there. So the boy was there, meets with the teacher. "Sir, I want to join your Gurukulam. Will you please accept me as a student?" So the teacher is the same question, application form. "What is your name?" He says, "My name is Jabala." "What is your father's name?" "I don't know, sir." "You don't know your father's name?" "Where is your father?" "I don't know, sir." "What happened?" "What is your gotra?" "I don't know my gotra, sir." "What is the matter?" Then the boy said, "I asked my mother. This is what she said. She used to work as a domestic help in some homes when she was young. I was born. She does not know who my father was. And I don't know my gotra. This is what my mother told. This is what it is." The teacher, the boy thought he will reject him. But the teacher looked at the boy and he was very much impressed. But his boy's courage in telling the truth, though it was an unpleasant and painful truth. The boy didn't try to hide it and say something else. He told the truth, though it was unpleasant. The teacher appreciated that, his honesty, straightforwardness. He said, "All day, I will accept you as a student. You come and join." So the boy started living there. After one day, what happened? So the boy was thinking that other boys are there. Every morning they get up and they attend the class, Vyakarana, Samskrita, Grammar, Shabda, Rama, Ramo, Rama, all those things they have to memorize. Sanskrit they have to learn and the Veda chanting they have to do. And then after the class they have to do some chores, collecting firewood, etc. So the boy thought he will be like other boys doing all those things. He was ready. No such thing happened. Next day, morning, the teacher, Haridramatha Gautama, calls the boy. He gave him a new name from that day onwards. He says, "From today onwards, your name is Satyakama. Satyakama means one who seeks the truth. You have that quality, so I'll call you Satyakama hereafter. So you know as Satyakama. If Satyakama come here," so the boy thought he'll be admitting him to your class today. "No such thing." He says, "Satyakama, I have a special assignment for you." "What, sir, can I do?" He says, "I have all these cows. The lot of them are very old and sick. And I cannot take care of them. There are so many of those. Can you do one thing for me?" "Whatever you say, sir, I will do," Satyakama says. Young boy, very courageous, very straightforward, sharp like a sword. Whatever you want, I will do, sir. So Satyakama, then you do one thing. You take 400 of these cows, old cows, they are very sick. You take them away, take care of them for some time. You attend to them and take care of them, and after some time when they all become healthy and begin to grow, they produce offspring. When these 400 become 1,000 strong, then you come back. Any other 8-year-old boy, if he had been given that assignment, see, normally we expect the boys to sit in the class and memorize books and learn Veda and do some things like with the other kids in the leisure time. No such thing. To take care of one cow, you know how difficult? Some of you know, our parent generation used to have cows in their houses. One cow in the house means so much work. Whole house smells, and you have to take the house for grazing everything. Milkman has to come and milk, clean that cow shed every day, and then give bath to the cow. Lot of work is involved. One cow, 400 sick old cows. This one little boy. And he has to go away, take them in the forest. Where does he go? How to feed these 400 cows? How to take care of them? He never taken care of a cow probably before. He said, yes sir, I will do that one. I'll take these 400 cows. And when you read that boy giving that reply, yes sir, I will go, everybody will be moved. Such a small boy, so much courage. Yes sir, I will do, can do. 400 cows to take care of one little boy. And the two in the forest can't stay in the ashram. Teacher has them to go away. Don't come back until they become 1,000 strong. Can you imagine the situation? The boy rises to that. Yes sir, I will do that one. Walks away with 400 old sick cows, little boy. When read that, it is so moving in that story. Sandhya Upanishad comes, goes away. For a long time, he takes care of the 400 cows. So many years pass because they have to become 1,000, they have to become healthy, they have to produce offspring. Until then, he cannot go back. Teacher had told, other boys are nicely staying in the ashrama every day, sleeping, and mother, guru's wife will give food, eating, all those things. But this boy, none of those things. He has to take care of the cows, 400 of them. So for many years, he does very hard work, assiduously, diligently takes care of the cows. Slowly they begin to become healthy, takes them to places where nice grass, everything is available, takes them to the river, gives them bath, and they drink nice water. They stay at night, rest at some place. He will also sleep the same place where the cows are there at night. Like this, days and weeks and months and years passed. The boy is also growing nicely. What does he eat? Whatever is in the forest. No upma, idli, nothing, no sambar. Whatever is some fruits and whatever in the trees, he has to eat that one. And takes care of the cow. Grows up nicely to be a very strong young man. Grow up in the lap of nature. Cows also are very happy with him. All in the course of time, after many years, the cows are growing in strength. They become almost 1,000 in number. All healthily, the glow of health on their face. Cows are very happy. He is a happy, strong young man, standing tall and straight. Then they became 1,000 strong. In the story, then it becomes a little bit mystical. One of the cows, a bull, asks him and say something, gives him some upadesha about Atman, about Brahman. Then next day evening, where a sun comes in the form of another bird or something, swan or something, that gives some upadesha about Brahman. Third day evening, Agni himself gives some upadesha about Brahman. He used to set up fire at night, every night, to sleep in the warmth of the fire at night. Morning he would do some ablutions and continue his journey. He was going back to his teacher's house. Journey, return journey begins. Many days he has to travel to go back to his teacher. yet straight far away. Fourth day also he some teaching comes from some bird, Madhu bird it says, one kind of bird. Then fifth day, during the day, all these 1,000 strong, healthy cows, and Satyakama is a tall young man now, with so much strength in his body, grew in nature, they all reach teacher's house. Arjamada teachers, ashrama they reach, stand near the gate. Teacher sees that one, so that scene is very moving. Arjamada comes out and sees, this 1,000 cows are standing there in front of his gate, ashrama gate. All very healthy cows standing there, and in front of them this man is, young man is standing there, tall young man, well built. His face, this young man, Satyakama's face, Satyakama, I recognize Satyakama, you have come. Haridamata Gautama was overjoyed. And he notices that, Guru notices that Satyakama's face is glowing. Effulgence is there, glowing like the knower of Brahman. So, what the teacher says is, Satyakama, your face is glowing like the face of your Brahma Jnani. How did you get this knowledge of Brahman? Only Brahma Jnani can show that, have that tejas in that face. You have that. How did you get that knowledge? What this teacher probably suspected was, Satyakama must have gone to some other Gurukulam to learn something. That's how he got. No. Satyakama assures him, sir, this knowledge didn't come to him from any human teacher. I learned some things from nature, but my knowledge is not complete because I have heard in from the scriptures that knowledge will be complete only when it is imparted by a teacher personally. Guru Mukhena. So you gave me the finishing touches, you gave me the education. Only when the knowledge comes from a teacher, it fructifies in the heart of the student. So I seek your instruction. Satyakama says, gives his 1,000 cows to the teacher, bows down, Satyakama receives them, then gives some teaching, then he becomes a Brahmajnani, Satyakama. See how we reached the goal. What was his sadhana? No bhakti yoga, no nothing. No jnana yoga, no vedic sudramani, scripture, Bhagavad Gita, nothing. Became a Brahmajnani. How? Extremely unusual fashion. So those paths are available. But people like us, there is no way we can do that. One cow, if you somebody gives me in the ashram and take care of it, I get purgated, it will go to some other ashram. That was Satyakama's story. He becomes a Brahmajnani. Then what happens? At that time they had an option. They could go back and become householders, these boys after finishing their education. Or they could start a monastery themselves. So Satyakama went back and became a householder. He married, took a wife. He himself started the Gurukula. Satyakama started his own Gurukula. Then he accepted students like that. Though he also followed some unconventional methods to teach his students later on, Satyakama. So the story continues. Beautiful story. Such stories are there, very inspiring, very moving and fantastic stories in the Upanishads. It, behind all these stories, there is the knowledge of Brahman. That is the theme of the Upanishads. So this rich heritage we have, the richest spiritual cultural heritage we have inherited, and we should be proud of it. We should study that one. We should benefit from that, enrich our lives, find the goal of life. That is our task. If we don't do that, as if somebody has given a lot of wealth and we are not using it, we are just buying some hamburger for $2. Millions of dollars are with us. We don't use that, we don't touch that. We are just buying some hot dog or something and eat them all. This is food. We should not do like that. That richest heritage, cultural, spiritual heritage, we have inherited. We should be happy and we should be proud. It is ours. We have been given that one. We are born there. And we should become aware of that, get to know that one, little bit of study brings enormous joy it brings. Little bit of that. Sri Krishna says in the Gita, this vast dharma is there, heritage is there. Svalpamapi asya dharmasya tragete matrobayat. Little bit of this dharma, vast ocean of knowledge, rishis are given over generations, constantly rejuvenated, corroborated, updated, and validated knowledge has come to us. Not just one prophet said something some centuries ago, this is it, not like that. Every century it has been tested by numerous people, put to test, they have experienced the truth of that, they have shared their insights, added to this heritage continuously. It's been growing like that. That wealth is ours. And if we don't benefit from it, well, it's no good. Thank you very much. I'll say the closing prayer. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina Sarve Santu Niramaya Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kaschit Dukkha Bhad Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Oh, may all be happy, may all be free from diseases, may all realize what is auspicious, may no one be subject to misery. Om, peace, peace and joy be within us all, peace and harmony be amongst all beings, and peace be everywhere. Hari Om Tat Sat Sarvam Sri Krishna Arpanamastu Sarvam Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.